Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's Brian Lehrer, and this is my Daily Politics Podcast from WNYC Studios. It's Friday, July 10th. International students at American universities may be forced out of the country if their schools don't offer in-person classes this fall, after everyone's favorite agency, ICE, Immigration and Customs Enforcement, announced a new policy this week. It says international students will have to leave the U.S. or enroll at a school offering in-person classes. If not, they face deportation. Students currently outside the U.S. would not be allowed to enter or re-enter the country under the new plan if they're enrolled at universities offering only remote classes. This sudden announcement comes as universities are just rolling out their fall plans amid the COVID-19 pandemic. A lot of them don't even know what they're going to do yet. And while some schools like NYU and Columbia already expected a hybrid of in-person and remote learning, which would wind up protecting the international students, many schools, including some CUNY campuses, have announced remote-focused fall semesters with few in-person options due to coronavirus concerns. Last year, there were over 1 million international students in the United States, according to a report by Open Doors, which is a U.S. State Department-funded information source. Over 9,000 of those students were at CUNY in New York alone. Joining me now to discuss further and take your calls is one international CUNY student, Nicola Gu, Vice Chair of International Student Affairs at the University Student Senate at the City University of New York, and Dan Berger, partner at the immigration law firm Curran, Berger, and Klutt, who specializes in academic immigration. Welcome, both of you, to WNYC. Thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you so much, Thank you. Brian.
Nicole, I see you're an international student at the College of Staten Island. What's going on there? What's going on with you?
The College of Staten Island is a sub-college to the City University of New York, and they can only make a decision based on the entire situation if CUNY, work towards it. So it's up to the administration in CUNY to make a decision whereby all colleges follow up on what's going to happen next. But since the day that I got the news on the ICE policy, I've been pushing that CUNY should declare a hybrid modality so that the school can be demonstrated as one of the schools in the fall that will embrace a model, a hybrid model for international students. And this information can be taking up to SEVP, the Student Exchange Visitor Program, and that way students are saved from deportation. But that has been my proposal to the CUNY administration, and the Board of Trustees held their special meeting yesterday and decided to leave that decision to the CUNY administration rather than them just making the decision themselves. And that has been the current stage of this entire situation.
So that's got to be not only infuriating to you, but unsettling, because here we are on, July 10th, and you don't know yet whether you're going to be subject to deportation, because you don't know yet if your CUNY campus is going to be open for in-person classes.
Exactly. And I spoke with the chairperson for USS yesterday, who's also a student trustee on the Board of Trustees table, and he explained to me that the special meeting basically talked about the entire situation, and if this policy is upheld, which they strongly doubt that it would, then the Board of Trustees could make a decision that could protect international students directly rather than leaving the decision to CUNY administration. But to me, it doesn't really make any sense, because they could make a really quick decision right now to save these students rather than leaving it to the CUNY administration. And ICE needs a decision from schools by July 15th. Ah. However, he did mention to me that since there are so many universities filing a case against ICE because of this policy, July 15th might be, you know, will not be the deadline for ICE to get a decision because there are cases pending in the court.
Such as that. Harvard and MIT going to court
exactly.
to try to block this policy. So Dan Berger, as the lawyer in the room, this is where you come in. What does ICE claim is the legal backing, the legal basis for this order? If students are in the country legally with visas, can ICE just stand up one Monday and say, no, you can't stay here anymore if you have remote learning?
Well, it's a good point. A lot of the student visa rules were really created before the internet. So the idea was that students would be physically going to class, and international students for decades have been very limited in how many online courses they can take and still stay in the country. What happened was in March, April, May, when COVID was really getting started, I have to give them credit. The Department of Homeland Security, the State Department were really very flexible, and they basically put out guidance that said, you know, as long as the public health emergency continues, we're going to be flexible. We understand that some classes may be online, that some may be hybrid, that some may be in person, and that this may change month to month. And that was good. And then we started to go through the summer waiting for guidance for the fall and not getting it. And so, you know, as Nicole said, it's very frustrating because it makes it difficult not only for the schools but for the students to plan their lives. So anyway, that's a long answer. The short answer is that what we're hoping for is that ICE will continue the flexibility that they showed in the spring. Legally, students should be taking in-person classes. Their argument is that, well, if they're not taking in-person classes, they don't need to be here. When you first hear that, that seems to make some sense, but it ignores the fact that students may not have a safe place to go, that students may be getting other services on campus, that students may be from a place where it would be very difficult for them to access, you know, internet and take synchronous classes and so forth. So it's really a policy that came up very late and really takes away all the flexibility that all the schools had spent their summers designing plans on.
So listeners, again, we can take your phone calls if you are an international student yourself grappling with this ICE announcement from the other day, or other people connected to universities, faculty members, administrators. How are you getting to help there's probably, you know, nary a faculty member or administrator in all of America who likes this idea. So are there things that you're planning now to help your international students stay in the country? 646-435-7280, 646-435-7280. And I'm actually going to take a caller who's going to raise yet another concern about this, and it's Tom in the East Village. Tom, you're on WNYC. Thank you for calling in.
Yes, good morning, Brian. Thank you very much. I'd be very curious to hear your guests' views. Clearly, for Trump, this is all about headlines around immigration. But as a so-called successful business person and someone who's relying on a strong economy in order to get reelected, the reality is that colleges and universities are on the verge of bankruptcy, and they need this tuition in order to survive. I'll listen offline, and thank you for all you do, Brian.
Thank you very much. So, Nicole Agu, I'll go to you as an international student at the College of Staten Island and a member of the University Student Senate at CUNY. There are different kinds of financial issues that, you know, come into play here, along with the human rights and just being a human being issue and issues. And one of them is, since Trump wants the economy to reopen as much as possible, he's trying to push K through 12 or pre-K through 12 students back into the classroom as well. Maybe he's trying to do that with university students also. So there's more opening, there's more employment, the economy looks better for that October jobs report before the November election. But there's also exactly what the caller raises, which is a lot of international students pay full freight, and universities around the country really rely on their tuition to stay afloat. And so it also, sabotages university revenue and financial feasibility if they can't continue to charge these students, if the students are willing to pay. Do you want to enter that part of the conversation anywhere with an opinion?
Yes. When the quarantine started, of course, this affected everyone globally, including international students who are currently working here on campus and their sponsors back home. And it has been such a drastic financial challenge for international students this period of time, because even though the universities are expecting international students to pay in full, which of course we always find a way to do that, but it's still a burden for us. And at CUNY, personally, since 2019 December, I've been pushing that CUNY should allow their international students to pay a tuition cap, which of course is still, triple times the amount of the regular students, but a tuition cap is better for CUNY students than paying a tuition per credit. So let me explain that. Mm-hmm. At CUNY, international students are full-time students, and they are expected to maintain 12 credits or more every semester in order to maintain that full-time status. And the way we pay our tuition is we pay tuition per credit. And every year, tuition per credit increases. For example, when I first started, tuition per credit was $580. Right now, tuition per credit is $620. So if I was taking, let's say, 15 credits in a semester, I'm paying 15 credits times $620, or 15 credit times, or 16 credit times 620. So that's how the tuition works in CUNY for international students. So I came up with a proposal that the Board of Trustees should cap the tuition at 12. In other words, students are able to take more than 12 credits and still pay a tuition cap of, for example, 12 times 620. That's 7,000 plus of tuition that a senior college international student is paying, and maybe in a community college, the international student is paying a cap of 3,500. That is still more than what a regular student is paying. But I proposed a tuition cap because not only would it retain international students, but it would make it easier for prospective international students who are planning financially, because we have to show a statement that we can actually afford the tuition. So if tuition is changing every year, which most international students are unaware of, when they are giving out their financial statements at the time of admission, they are not sure of if that statement is enough, because they keep increasing the tuition, making it a heavy burden on international students.
Dan, for you as a lawyer, I've read that some schools are planning now, if this policy gets upheld, and the Trump administration can, they seem to be trying everything to get as many immigrants barred from the country, legal as well as illegal. And this is the latest piece of that. If you're a legal international student, but your college is offering remote learning only, you get kicked out of the country. So I read that some schools are already talking about offering one credit in-person courses for international students, providing a kind of loophole. Do you think that would hold up in court for you as a lawyer?
I think it would. There is no real definition of hybrid model. The schools just really have to certify that the program is not completely online. What's so frustrating about that is that I think it's wonderful that schools are trying to be creative and find ways to support international students, just like what Nicole's been suggesting. But what's so frustrating is that you're really forcing schools to create an in-person option, even though over the summer they've met with public health experts and thought about the safety of their students and staff and faculty and decided that in-person is not a good idea. And in some cases, some students are thinking of transferring to another school, that and some schools are willing to take them in, kind of the way schools took in students from New Orleans after Katrina. But again, having people move during COVID, having people do in-person classes during COVID just for visa purposes is just frustrating. And just really quickly, so that the Harvard-MIT case that you mentioned, there was a scheduling conference this morning at 10, and the judge has said that she wants amicus briefs to be delivered by the 13th, and she'll make a decision by the 15th. So it is moving along quickly, and we're obviously hoping that there'll be a
so that Harvard this policy will be thrown MIT out. Going to court to try to get the policy thrown out. The 13th is Monday, and the 15th is Wednesday. So this is going to move really fast in court, from what you just said.
Yes.
Rajika in Westchester, you're on WNYC. Hi, Rajika.
Hello, and thank you for taking my call.
Sure. What would you like to add?
So I wanted to sort of place this in a broader context, and, you know, you began to allude to some of those things already, and we just heard the student talk about the economic impact, and we know that nationally, international students have an impact of almost $45 billion on the U.S. economy. And it's, a U.S. credential is the fifth largest export in the U.S., yet one that doesn't leave American shores. And with what's happening right now and with this latest proposal, what we really need to look at is the long-term and collateral damage of what one might almost see as being these microaggressions against international students. And you just mentioned some of them around immigration policy. We've seen the whole debate play out around optional practical training and green cards, et cetera. And what all of this is really adding up to is a real diminishing of the U.S. on the global stage as a land of invention, of opportunity and innovation, and a country to date that's really attracted the best talent from around the world. And all of that is at risk now. And already for, 3 years in a row, we've seen the numbers of international students, either new international students or enrolled students, declining in the U.S. And
yes.
So there's a lot more at stake here. And even if this gets reversed, as I hope it will be, I think all of these measures are adding up to conveying the image of the U.S. as just not being a very appealing destination anymore for international students.
Yeah, and you say microaggressions, it's macroaggressions, right? There's nothing really small or subtle about what they're trying to do. But Rajika, thank you so much for adding all that. And Beto in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hello, Beto.
Hello, Brian. Yes, I'm a professor at LaGuardia Community College in CUNY, and I wanted to just uplift the conversation around the possibility of CUNY going into some kind of hybrid form in the fall. There is a petition going around that is being circulated to encourage the Board of Trustees and the Chancellor to encourage and think about the possibilities here. And I think it's really important because, not just from an economic point of view, but just in terms of our, cultural and philosophical ecology for our campuses, these students are so necessary. And whatever we can do, and I really encourage CUNY to take that seriously and to really look at the possibilities. I think there's a lot of creative solutions that can be done in terms of what hybrid could look like.
Thank you so much. Here's another international student, Valen in Queens. You're on WNYC. Thank you so much for calling in. Hi.
Hi, good morning.
Do you want to tell some of your own story or your own situation relating to this?
Sure. So I'm from Argentina. I'm non-binary. I came to New York in August of last year, and I was publicly out for the first time in New York. I chose New York as my home, and it's heartbreaking. It's been consistently destabilizing. Since I arrived here, there's been obviously a lot of rhetoric and a lot of tweets, as everyone knows. But I think this is the first time that we received, since it's an institutional thing, it was a real gut punch to read that in black and white, that thousands of us were going to have to go home. Several of my classmates are abroad and are currently stranded and being threatened of having their F1 status completely revoked. And yeah, I guess, you know, making the most of the fact that WNYC has made this call out to international students, I just kind of wanted to express how cruel and brutal it is. And there's a lot of focus on the economics and, well, you know, you can just continue your studies at home. Isn't that nice? Without really considering the difficulty that that entails. It's not just doing your master's degree remotely. There's a reason why we chose to make New York our home and to study here.
Yes.
Anything that you want to ask, I'm here for it.
Are you doing any extracurricular activities? Because that occurs to me, too, as another reason that people may want to be here, even if the classes are remote.
Exactly. Yeah, that's a good question, actually. So I'm actually doing a master's degree, so I don't think it's directly translatable like in a undergraduate degree, but I'm on the Graduate Student Council. I'm actually the two co-presidents of our Graduate Student Council are immigrants, and we're heavily involved in the queer club, NABJ, NAHJ. We're definitely highly involved in school activities.
Dear listeners, you have more about this order from the Trump administration for all international students in the U.S. to leave the country if their colleges go remote learning in the fall, and the lawsuit and lawsuits now against it that we might have a resolution on by next Wednesday, according to our lawyer guests, and making some of these, as Nicole said, cash cows seem like human beings. And there we go. Nicole Agu, Vice Chair of International Student Affairs at the University Student Senate at CUNY, the City University of New York, and Dan Berger, partner at the immigration law firm Curran, Berger and Klutt. Thank you both so much for coming on.
Thank you so much for the opportunity.
Thank you, Brian.
Brian Lehrer, a Daily Politics podcast, is an excerpt from my live daily radio show, The Brian Lehrer Show, on WNYC Radio, 10 a.m. to noon Eastern Time, if you want to listen live at WNYC.org. Thanks for listening today. Talk to you next time.